The medieval period is a long one, covering near enough 1,000 years. We have covered two major civilizations from the early Middle Ages, the Anglo-Saxons and the Vikings. Today, though, we're focusing on the high and the later Middle Ages, with the Normans and the Plantagenets, which ended with the death of King Richard III in 1485 and marked the beginning of the Tudor period. The high and later Middle Ages, as you've just heard Jack say, saw castles and sprawling monastic estates spring up around our region, bringing new forms of art and architecture to North Yorkshire. Well, with us now in the studio is Dr. Emma Wells, who is Associate Lecturer in Parish Church Studies at the University of York and the author of Pilgrim Roots of the British Isles. Good morning. Welcome
Good
to the
morning.
Studio. Middle Ages. I don't know. When someone says Middle Ages to me, I think of muddy, yucky streets and people dying of the plague and that kind of thing. It's those sort of thumbnail sketch sort of outlines of different historic periods. I'm assuming I'm wrong.
Yes and no, although people certainly did bathe. You know, there was sort of waters and ponds that you could go to. So, you know, they weren't as, certainly weren't as dirty as you quite think, although we did have the plague in the 14th century, so there was people dying of the plague and that got rid of quite a lot of the population, so that's true too.
Let's think more about the upside of it all. Jack was just talking about art and about architecture, and obviously as a specialist in parish churches, that is one of your key areas of interest. Let's talk about the objects that you chose to highlight for us today to illustrate what this period of history brings. And there's actually a little video on Twitter at the moment showing what you're talking about, but these are some extraordinary wall paintings, some murals.
Yes, this is from St. Peter and St. Paul's in Pickering, and these are sort of mid-15th century wall paintings, and they show lives of the saints as well as the Passion of the Christ. They show the Virgin Mary, the funeral, the Assumption. They also show the corporal acts of mercy. But what's particularly interesting about these this cycle of paintings is that it's sort of in the calendar of the church. It follows the religious calendar of the church, which is why it makes these so special. So we have, right at the beginning, we have Easter with the Passion of the Christ in March, and then it follows all the way round to Christmas, about Christmas period, with Thomas Becket's feast day there, so which makes them extremely significant. And we haven't really looked at wall paintings within this way, so it shows that they were right at the heart, they were an active part of the liturgy, liturgical practices, whereas they weren't just a backdrop, they were coherent within everything that was going on.
What was happening in church, of course, if I'm right anyway at the time, was that the services were being delivered in Latin, which was perhaps something that the vast majority of the congregation didn't really understand.
Yes, well, this is an interesting one, because we sort of see wall paintings often as bibliopoporum, or Bibles for the poor. There are a lot of scholars that say that, okay, that yes, they were, because many were illiterate and they couldn't read. Therefore, they couldn't understand the war paintings themselves. However, if that's the case, they also couldn't read and interpret the attributes, everything that was going on in the paintings. However, there are others that suggest that they could read every pose, every gesture, every colour. Everything had a significant meaning behind it. What's also interesting is there's some evidence, I know at Canterbury, for example, of tour guides who would go around and essentially explain the wall paintings, stained glass, etc., the same way that they do today. So that's neither here nor there. They may have not, but I certainly think that the medieval populace did have an understanding of gesture, colour, pose.
Do we know who painted these paintings on the walls of Pickering Church? And first of all, how lucky are we to have them? Because I was under the impression that with the Reformation and the arrival of Henry VIII and everything that was regarded as, you know, having a connection to Rome, you know, stained glass and wall paintings and statues of the Virgin Mary and everything, that everything was sort of was smashed up, that there was a sort of iconoclasm, and that these paintings are there in all their colour and glory and beauty.
Well, there's actually a very interesting story related to these specific wall paintings. They were whitewashed over in the 16th century, come the Protestant Reformation. However, they were discovered in 1853 by the Reverend Ponsonby, I think his name was.
Oh, wonderful. We've got to have
sure
a Ponsonby in every programme.
And however, he found them to be ridiculous, and he thought that they would sort of get in the way of the congregation and they would annoy them, you know, they would distract them, there would be a distraction. So he wanted them covered over again. However, the person employed to do so said, no, I don't want that to happen. No, let's not do this. So he tampered with the mixture And that allowed 20 years later for them to be exposed once again. This was in the 19th century, for them to be exposed once again.
What a wise trick to pull on the vicar. And let's just talk about what they show, because they are quite dramatic. There's one, for example, that I think, just looking at it, based on my poor knowledge, it looks to me like it shows St. Christopher.
Yes. There is St. Christopher there. Yes.
And there's another one that I immediately said, now hang on, I think I know which saint that is, St. Sebastian, because there's a character that's full of arrows, which is how St. Sebastian is always painted.
Yes, it's not St. Sebastian, it's St. Edmund. It's the 8th century East Anglian king. So he's actually got a few more arrows. He's got his crown on, so you can, that's how you can sort of differentiate him. And he'll be having, probably he's having his head cut off. I believe he is in that one. So that's usually how you can differentiate. A few more arrows, a crown, usually his head's been cut off. Most of them on that side of the church are actually martyrs who were beheaded. So that's quite an interesting attribute.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is our beheaded side.
Yes.
And how significant, how important is artwork like this? Where does it tell us about where we had got up to in our development?
It's extremely important because it shows so many different things. It shows that we were integrating art and architecture as one coherent scheme. It shows that we were wanting to inspire sort of devotion and contemplation to all, and also that you were wanting to educate the laity, I believe, educate the laity in some sort of way. But also that it's showing the laity the transience of life. So it's showing that death and judgment is unavoidable.
This is the memento mori, remember you will die.
Yes, exactly. I mean, in the past they were sort of seen as rudimentary sort of paintings, but I think we can all see now that they certainly are not.
What it suggests is, and I mentioned in my introduction about you know, the great monastic houses, and we've got so many examples of those around our part of the world. We're very, very lucky to have all the ruins of so many great monastic houses, is that religion was very, very important, that was part of an everyday everybody's everyday life. Was it really?
Yes, well, this is an interesting one. I mean, monastic institutions certainly dominated Yorkshire. I mean, they owned pretty much all of the land. Well, most of the land anyway. You would have your local lords and your monastic institutions, which owned the land itself. Therefore, they became extremely wealthy, as they had either freemen or they would have serfs who were, you know, working on the land or owning the land and paying rent to them. And they were dominating the wool trade. That's how they gained their money, which allowed them, therefore, to go to York. And that's why York became such an important centre for trade, because it was, you know, so close. And they could build more and more buildings, and the cycle went on and on. But in terms of the everyday medieval person going to their local parish church, indeed the church dominated their everyday life in terms of the sacraments, so marriage, births, deaths, funerals, etc. Indeed, that marked every significant point. It influenced your ethics, so the teachings of the church influenced your beliefs and ethics, and also your beliefs in life and the afterlife.
I've got a feeling there's a but coming here.
But whether you went to church every day, that's a little bit of a different point. No is possibly the answer, but we don't entirely know. We don't have the data for that. Certainly it was compulsory to go at Easter and Christmas for communion, but every Sunday as we would expect one to go to church, no, that doesn't seem to have been the case. As long as you were following the Christian life, as long as you were living by the Bible, that was what dominated, what should dominate your life, but not essentially going to church. The sort of modern ideology of the congregation, the church being about the congregation, is much more of a modern ideology.
If I asked you, and this would have to be fairly brief as someone who's interested in medieval times, if you had to look around you today and say, do you know what, that's what we owe to the medieval period, is there too much to pick one thing, or is there something you could say, do you know what, without this period in history, we wouldn't really have that these days?
York Minster.
Well, there we are. That's not bad, is it?
No.
We've got to leave it there. But thank you so much indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. And for explaining, I'm sure, to some people listening in Pickering this morning about those wonderful paintings. They're worth going in to see if you've never seen them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you.
Dr. Emma Wells, thank you for joining us this morning. Dr. Emma Wells, Associate Lecturer in Parish Church Studies at the University of York. It's 26 minutes past 11 now.